My name is Skawanadi. I'm Ganyanke Haga, a Mohawk from Gahnawage, and I'm a visual artist.
Yeah, a good one. So this podcast is called Our Medicines, Giano Mashkake Wakan in Nehiyawewin. I feel like all of the work of everyone that I'm interviewing is really like medicine that they're receiving from community or providing community, and then how they provide that medicine to themselves after, like, stepping away from that work, and how we do it, if we do it at all, because sometimes we don't, right? Mm-hmm. I've said this so many times, like, I hate the word decolonization. How do you feel about that word these days? Especially in light of what's going on, like Tayandinaga, the cops, Wet'suwet'en. How do you feel these days?
You have someone like, let's say, like Justin Trudeau, who's got a Haida tattoo on him, who thinks he's down, who thought he was. But when push comes to shove, mm-hmm. when the real questions come up, he's not down, and he cannot be down because he's no longer Justin Trudeau anymore. Yeah. He's Prime Minister of Canada. And his job is Canada. But at the same time, I say that, you know, I still have lots of hope. You know, I do think Canada can be something else. It can be Ganada, like, right? It could be, I really think it could be something else, especially if the corporations that purportedly make the country go change. Like, I truly think it's possible. And what I can't understand is why it's so difficult. I'm willing to pay a little bit more for no more, you know, for no more plastic in the ocean. You know, I'm willing to pay a little bit more for no, you know, the landfills not being ridiculous. The pipeline thing is really, yeah. Anyway, it just seems to me we have to change something where we use less.
And all that money going towards pipelines goes towards renewable energies and to making jobs in that sector. Like, the plans are actually there, but they're not being implemented because then those companies would lose money, right? Mm-hmm. Fucking pipelines. Have you been to the blockade in Ganawaga?
I haven't.
Okay. Do you have a desire to go?
No.
Okay.
I don't because of lots of reasons. Mm-hmm. I've been to lots of demonstrations, and I think it's important. I really actually think that solidarity is showing up. Mm-hmm. Honest to God, I really do. But it's just at where I am at this moment, I'm tired.
Yeah.
And I'm doing a lot of different things, and I believe, and I have to believe this, I do believe that my artwork is a form of activism. It's a slow motion kind of change, desire for change, putting forth those ideas into the world and trying to make them into reality.
Can you tell me about your artwork then? That's a good segue. Thank you.
Well, because I'm making it right now. I'm mm-hmm. really working like a lot of hours a day trying to get my artwork made. And what it is...
Quite literally, like sewing.
Sewing, and but also, you know, the digital stuff is like, it requires work, it requires time and energy, and your physical, your eyes have to look at it, your hand has to do this stuff, or like in my case, I do have a student working on some of the graphic design elements. I, you know, need to sit with her, interface with her, and work, you know.
Did you say interface with her?
I did.
Okay.
Did I
like sit with her in real life or like?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you call that interfacing?
I do. I mean, like, what is,
it sounds quite like technological or something. Are we interfacing right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we are.
I'm glad.
I'm pretty sure interface came before computer interface.
Yeah, okay.
The word interface, you know? So let's just look that up. The place at which independent and often unrelated systems meet and act on or communicate with each other. The man-machine interface. So we are not interfacing.
Listen, you're on the... like the cusp of some digital phantasmagorical situation every day. So you're taking things to different heights, you know? Or you're just turning into a robot.
I am.
Okay, so tell me about your artwork though. Right. Like from, just explain it so people know what you
well,
do.
Well, I think the way I usually explain it is that for the last long while, you know, a couple of decades, I have been imagining indigenous people in the future and making imagery about it. And so some of the ways I've done that include creating a character, Hunter, from the in a Mishinima called Time Traveler TM, who lives in the future. So he's a Mohawk right. man who actually lives in the future. He interfaces with technology.
Thank you.
And uses it to learn about his own heritage. So he ends up traveling to the past. So in my work, despite the fact that I've been trying to portray and depict the future, I have found that I've gone back in the past quite a yeah. bit. And I now see that that's absolutely necessary. The yeah. future is always, it can't happen without the past. You can't even try to depict a future. So what do you, you know, and what do you keep? What, you know, what do you throw away from the past to create that futuristic look and place?
So when you started, let's say with Cyber Powwow, mm-hmm. tell me what Cyber Powwow is, and were any other Indigenous folks doing what you were doing at that time?
So Cyber Powwow was a combination chat space, online gallery and library, and mixed reality event. It wasn't even, that term mixed reality event was not a term yet, of course, at the time. Okay. But so it was a bunch of things. The first thing that happened really was that I was shown this new software that was like unlike anything that had come before, because it was a graphical chat room. There had already been chat rooms at that time, and mm-hmm. what a chat room was just someone typing in a window.
I lived in chat rooms, loved chat rooms. You know that. I've told you that before. Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, I can so see you.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, I didn't, because I don't know why I didn't. I liked them fine, but oh, you were God, I saw this graphical okay. chat room. Instead of, you know, a window for a room, it was actually still a window, but they drew the room. And, you know, what's a great big collection of rooms? A palace!
Right.
So that was very cute, because a lot of people are like, why would you choose something that was so imperialistic? And I'm like, you know, I decolonized it.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
So this collection, so it was just so amazing. The Palace was the name of the software, and you had to download the client, and you'd have this one window that had an image. Let's say it was the Palace Gate. So it was, you know, the room was called Palace Gate. You could also go into the lounge. You could go to the Great Hall. Other little windows you were able to open would be the chat window. But actually, you don't have to open that, because when you're chatting, your tag, your words appear next to your avatar
okay.
in a little bubble. And then avatars is the first time I ever heard that word. And of course, it was used in the way I think most of us use it today. But the avatar was, you know, 2D little disc, mm-hmm. of a smiley face. Mm-hmm. And you could move that smiley face around by pressing the arrow key, go up or down, or, you know, okay. yeah. But what was interesting about the palace is it was very customizable, and they encouraged people. They knew already they were trying to encourage community. They were trying to encourage people to make their own palaces. They made their P server software available okay. to people. So that's what I did. So that's what Cyber Powwow was. Mm. I created my own palace okay. and I didn't do it alone. So, and that's where it comes to the question of if there are other people around doing it. At first I did a lot of it by myself. The first Cyber Powwow was me inviting a couple of other artists and writers. I asked them to make work that would be on a web page, and that then we would go to the palace to talk about it. People came to this gallery. Oberoi Gallery was the host, and we also set up another gallery, thanks to friends that from far away, Lori Blondeau and Tribe and Bradley LaRocque agreed to be another gathering site. So Oberoi and, you know, here in
okay,
Montreal,
so live events.
And Tribe, exactly. Tribe okay. and Saskatoon were two gathering sites that were going to welcome individuals to come in and look at the work on the website and come play on the palace.
Okay.
So remember, this is 1997. People don't
That's
have
early.
Computers at
yeah.
their house.
Yeah.
And even if they have computers, they often don't have modems. Mm-hmm. They don't, you know, and then finally, they don't want to download a client. What yeah. does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, like, so there's many barriers to people actually coming and joining in, which is very different from today. So we're like, come, we're going to have food. It's going to be like a powwow, but mm-hmm. it's going to be cyber.
Right.
Right. And it was actually pretty successful. I mean, even today, I can't get over that. We did it for 2 days. And of course, Ryan Rice, Eric Robertson, and I had started Nation to Nation. Nation to Nation was a was a collective of artists that we were already doing like shows in the city. We already, I think we already had a touring show called Native Love. So Cyber Powwow was a nation to nation project. So yeah, it was just this wonderful 2-day event, which people came and, you know, we're showing them like, how do you look, this is you.
Did they love it? What did they think?
I think people loved it. I felt like people had a good time. Felt like they were like, oh my God, I'm talking to someone in Saskatoon. That's Lori Blondo. That smiley face. Like, you know.
And what was the response in terms of like having Indigenous people, Indians in cyberspace? What was that? Like, did anybody comment on that? Or
What was the big conversation that I recall was people were like, how are we going to know that they're really native?
Oh, interesting. Because that's kind of happening right now.
Without avatars.
Or maybe with avatars, we don't even know, right? Like, okay.
What I recall happening was that people would be like, you're online, and there's other little happy faces around.
Right.
And yeah, at this moment, I'm imagining us in another iteration of Cyber Powwow where we had made our own palace. So you're inside of a teepee, you're under an arbor, you're, you know, the rooms are like.
So like the first iteration of Avtech, sort of, in a way.
Absolutely, we think that.
Yes.
Yeah. So someone's typing, and everyone, of course, doesn't have their real name. You know, like I was XOX right from back then. Mm. So someone's like, "Hey, where are you from?" And they go, "Winnipeg." And they're like, "Oh, really? Do you know so and so maybe?" And they would discover who each other was through talking, you know. And so basically, it was the same way that
it's just that community building,
exactly. Like, but it's also the same way we figure out authenticity now. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, who do you know?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Who's your family?
Yeah.
Who's your community? Yeah, exactly. So then after Cyber Powwow, what happened? You want a sip of your tea?
So Cyber Powwow continued from 1997, I think is the right year, till 2004. We did the events every 2 years, basically. We were just really doing stuff like, you know, for, well, I think the joy of it, it was really for community building.
Yeah.
I think. But also, I think it was, you know, it was so important for us to be in this space, in cyberspace, mm-hmm. I think. But I don't know if I knew that right away. I definitely thought, oh my God, this is exactly the tool that Native people need, like contemporary mm-hmm. Native artists. We're all spread out across this huge land. How can we connect? And at that time, I mean, I was able to connect because I was working at Obro, where there was a computer and a modem. Mm-hmm. And there was the will, there was the goodwill to let me try out. I was exploring. I was researching. Now we would call that research. I was figuring out how to use this new technology and then how to make stuff with it. And so it was wonderful that Obro.
What is Obro?
Obro, the artist-run center.
Yeah.
You're based here in Montreal. The next thing that happened was that we realized we needed our own palace. And it needed to be built. And it would be really cool if we built it in a residency. Mm-hmm. So I was able to bring people to Banff, learned how to use the palace to make things. I knew how to set up the P server. You know, other people knew how to do scripting. It took a while sometimes for each iteration to come about.
But then you developed the palace and...
And so the happy ending of that story is that we... I finally met someone from Rhizome and told them about Cyber Powwow, and they were like, that should be in our Rhizome. Like,
is it like a museum or something? Like a cyber museum?
Yes.
And so now they're going to revive
Cyber Powwow. So basically, you know, the palace kind of, it didn't die, but it stopped being supported by the people who made it. So then just all the lovers of the palace started to support it, you know, like work on it and keep it running.
That's like real community support, right?
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Yeah.
What I ultimately wanted it to be was a kind of community center mm-hmm. where people would drop in all the time and talk to one another, you know, and that never happened.
Okay. Yeah. Why do you think that is?
Because people didn't, I think it was mostly because they didn't want to download like the client.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the main reason. And I just think people didn't love it.
Okay.
Yeah, which I don't get because I love it, you know. I mean, why don't people come and hang out at Avtech Island?
Well, you need to download.
So you think it's the same thing?
Well, that shit is heavy. Do you feel like, okay, well, now we're getting ahead of ourselves, but we'll come back to Avtech.
So 2004 was our last iteration of Cyber Powwow.
Yeah.
But at some point I realized, like, I didn't want to do that. I really wanted to make Imagining Indians in the 25th Century.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I proposed that and, you know, I proposed it being a web-based work and, you know, and I made it.
For the gallery?
Yeah. At the then art gallery of Edmonton.
Okay.
Yeah, and so we installed it in like about 5 IMACs in a circle with the piece on the IMAX. And I remember they said, Scavenati, you brought us kicking and screaming into the 20th century. That show opened in 2001. That was my first piece in which I really envisioned Indigenous people in the future. I had this whole timeline, mm-hmm. character, Gotzitza Hawi Kapozo, and, you know, in an inexplicable way, she time travels and she keeps a journal and she has a costume.
And what was the response? Were people ready for that? You're like, I don't care. That's okay to not care. That's okay.
I don't know what they thought.
Okay.
I don't collect their thoughts. I love that piece. I think it was a really important piece for me. So I loved it because I got to design costumes. I did a lot of research. That's when I first started doing this historical research, mm-hmm. and sort of understanding the connection between future and history. It's so obvious sounding, but when you really go to depict the future, you're like, oh, I need to look at the past. You know, I had decided that this character was going to travel to one historical event or meet one historical character from each century, starting in 1490 before Columbus arrived and going to 2490. So I chose something from each century, had 10 main events on the timeline that you could have a costume for and have a journal entry for. So yeah, I really was happy with the final result. So got that, made that, and then, you know, someone said to me when they saw it, this is a really girly piece. I'm like, why? And they're like, well, journaling, paper dolls. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. I was like, okay, all right. So I just considered that. And I had done so much research, and I just was so, there was so much more to say and do and think about in this whole future, past, mm-hmm. time traveling, mm-hmm. kind of area, that I was like, all right, well, I still have, you know, I want to make the brother piece then. And so I was like, okay, what do boys play? Well, video game. And so I knew I wanted it to look like a video game. So but I didn't know how to make that, you know, and especially back then. I mean, it's still years before I hear the term machinima, mm-hmm. at this point. So I get invited to be in this show, Storybook Story, and so they wanted me to, they wanted each of the 4 invited artists who were kind of writers to respond to this problematic artifact they had acquired, that the Glenbow had acquired, called a panorama. So a panorama, if you've seen Time Traveler TM, you've seen one, mm-hmm. it's this contraption which allows you, it's kind of like the precursor to the movie, to a movie, okay? Only instead of actual film being rolled onto scrolls, it's actually paintings. They actually sew paintings, imagine rectangles, sewn together on the long ends, and they would like put them onto 2 sort of spools and roll them. A narrator explains what's in the picture. And anyway, it's telling the story of the Minnesota Massacre. And it's telling it from the white point of view, mm-hmm. and talking about what savages and horrible people the Indians were, and that they just, for no reason at all, like, killed all these settlers. And so, you know, I know why they wanted us to respond to it. Like, they didn't know how to show this work, so they thought by artists responding to it could be mitigated. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, the way I want to respond to it is that I want to start writing my brother piece to Imagining Indians. Mm-hmm. So I had this character in mind who became Hunter. I wrote a story of him watching the panorama. I think that's when I developed the actual glasses, because in Imagining Indians of the 21st century, it's not explained how she travels through time, she just does.
Right.
But in Time Traveler TM, which is what is happening now, I'm actually making Time Traveler TM without resetting out to yet, because now it's just, I'm just writing it.
Okay, I'm gonna stop you for a minute. So the sister piece, were you exploring any Ginyangahaga stories at that time?
Yes. Or what's... The main character is a Mohawk woman living in our time. And she is interested in Indigenous history. So the 1490, she goes to Tenochtitlan. And so that's the mm-hmm. capital of the Aztec Empire. And so what I wanted to show there was that we were civilized as Indigenous people. You know, and Tenochtitlan was supposedly like a wonder. The pyramids, it had canal systems and irrigation mm-hmm. systems and waste management systems. They had universities with books. You know, they weren't bound books like mm-hmm. are in you know, libraries that we know better, but they were written documents that had knowledge and contained knowledge in them. They had amazing costumes. They had intricate political and social
sort of systems or whatever. Systems yeah.
So yeah, I really wanted to show that. I definitely had her visit Kateri Tekakwitha. Mm-hmm. Pocahontas is someone I've been very interested in for. Well, I mean, I wanted her to go to see famous Native people most of all. Oh. In the future, she goes to see Raven from Snow Crash. So one of the few Native people I've ever seen in science fiction, and then Chakotay from Star Trek.
Okay, so that's the sister piece. So now someone tells you that it's super girly and that sort of like inspires you to make a brother piece to that. And so this is Hunter. So can you describe Time Traveler TM? And so who is Hunter?
Hunter is an angry young Mohawk man who lives in the year 2121. And in that time, there is a technology, an edutainment system called Time Traveler TM. And it consists of glasses. It just looks like really cool sunglasses.
Yeah.
If you put it on, it has a head-up display, and you can punch in a date. You can ostensibly time travel. So you're not really time traveling, you're just doing virtual reality. And, you know, Time Traveler TM, the company, they've oriented their database towards historical history. So they, you know, that's what they do best. This, you know, this device has made History 101 the favorite class of millions. You know, it's really fun. People can go, it feels like they're interacting with historical figures. He eventually uses it to find out more about his own heritage as a Mohawk person. So it's a 9-part machinima series. And what I want to tell you is, like, someone showed me Second Life. Much of the same way someone had shown me.
And that's how you create machinima.
Yes. So basically, Second Life to me was exactly like the palace, only better. Instead of little 2D flat avatars, now you have this entire body.
Right.
Walk, run, fly. You know, and I'm like, hey, my protagonist wears a jetpack. And, you know, you walk around in there and it looks like a video game. You know, so I was just like, oh my God, this is what I've been looking for to make this piece. And I also felt like it was very futuristic. Like, to me, Second Life was like the metaverse of Snow Crash. And I was like, this, you know, we are going to be hanging out here in the future.
Right.
Clearly. So what better medium to use to talk about people in the future than this futuristic virtual reality kind of world? So yeah, I started making machinima.
Right.
Movies in a virtual environment.
And I just want to touch on that. So you have this brother and sister piece. And so you're responding to this sort of like gender binary situation. Has anyone brought that up?
I have been kind of questioned, like, why are your characters so, people haven't said binary, but they have said
gendered,
they've said gendered. Yeah. But I mean, they talk about Second Life a lot. They usually say, like, you know, your men are so manly and your women are so busty.
Right.
Know? And a lot of that is the technology itself. Like, it's not impossible, but it's work to make those avatars less less manly and the women less busty. But nonetheless, I have done that. I have felt I have done it. And even before I started getting those questions, like, I mean, Luke Minowasti is a character who is a two-spirit person in episode 4. And, you know, that was like, I wasn't thinking about gender at all. I wasn't thinking about, like, what's a feminist piece. I was really thinking about telling this story, showing Indigenous people in the future, you know. And I did think that there was going to be queer people and two-spirit people in the future. So I really, you know, I do feel sometimes, too, like, when people talk about the big boobs in Second Life, I'm like, look at my face.
Yeah.
You know, like, instead of staring at the boobs of the characters, can you listen to the story? I mean,
well, they're very reminiscent of, like, Ken and Barbie. But did you find, just because your characters are Indigenous characters, did you find that there were any limitations that you ran up against? That's like, who created this software? Who did they have in mind? This doesn't fit me as an Indigenous person. Because I know you and Jason, who's your partner, have spoken about that. Who's writing the algorithms or who's controlling the data?
Well, I mean, the very first obvious thing was that Hunter's skin, which is fairly, he's like a tan guy.
Yeah.
That was the darkest skin available at the time.
Okay.
All of Second Life. So that was like 2004. Now, just to give Second Life the company like a little bit of leeway.
Sure.
You know, they always envisioned it as people making it for other people. That was a user-generated place. But when they first made it, everything was white.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So it took a while for like the black people, like African American shapes and color skins to show up. And now you can get anything anywhere. Like there, you know. And then what was also funny, I thought, is that before they had black people or super brown people, they had elves.
That says something. That was a default. So you know, there's like some D&D dudes. Cis white D&D dudes down there creating that program, right? Yeah.
That was one of the things. I mean, and then, you know, if you want to, that's the thing though. I don't expect the company to give me stuff. I don't expect them. I never expected Mattel to give me a native Barbie,
mm-hmm.
you know? When she started coming out, I started collecting her.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and I'm happy it's happened.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy that consumers have demanded diversity in their products.
Yeah.
But I guess from when I came up, when I was born, like mm-hmm. my age group, or just maybe being a poor person,
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
you know, I just didn't have a lot of expectations of me getting what was targeted to me, you know?
Yeah.
And again, thinking of Second Life as a place that you were supposed to contribute mm-hmm. to, you were supposed to make stuff for yourself and to give or sell to others.
How did you get the brown skin? Like, eventually it came out, or you had to create it yourself?
No, we found it.
Like, okay.
When you're in Second Life and you're purchasing a skin for someone, you buy them in usually a combination of a skin and a shape. Just imagine a blank doll, and then you can buy the skin that goes with that doll. So basically, it means like that the skin is actually just an image.
It's a layer that's just going to go on top of that doll.
It's a layer that goes on top of it. So you could buy 12 different skin colors, from super white. Mm-hmm. To that's the darkest.
So Second Life is basically a community of people creating all of these things, and again, a community that's sharing with each other. And so that's like an interesting element too.
Yeah.
People have been working on this with you.
Oh yeah.
Like youth have mm-hmm. a yeah, and what's their, they were super thrilled to be involved, or what was their reaction to it?
Who joined the team? They asked to work on it. So they were creating, for example, the headdresses worn in the Aztec episode.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
They created moccasins, you know, because nobody was selling moccasins in Second Life, so we had to make our own, you know, longhouses.
Yeah. And that's what the other thing that you came up against, with there's no like native content in Second Life, so you were creating it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are people buying it from you?
We don't sell it.
Oh, yeah. Yes! No. Yes!
It's not that. It's just that we'd have to set up a store.
Yeah, okay. It's a whole other bag of tricks. Okay. You're not anti-capitalist. You're just like...
I'm just busy.
Yeah. No, okay.
I'm not anti-capitalist. I mean, I don't know what it is, really. It's not high enough.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Because one of the people I work with has always said, let's set up a store. Like, these are so amazing. I mean, I really think our work is amazing.
It is amazing.
You know, like, the longhouses, the work these students have made for this project is gorgeous. You know, I was thinking we would give away some of the... I always wanted to do this, like, contest in Second Life. And they would be prizes. Like, you could win Hunter's jetpack.
That sounds cool.
I know.
I'd like to go forward to Abtech, because I think that's really, like, the sort of a culmination. It leads up to this amazing indigenous cyber island space.
Abtech Island.
Environment.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so, well, world. Abtech is a research creation network that Jason and I co-founded with a grant from the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council.
Maybe you could just say who Jason is.
Jason Edward Lewis mm-hmm. is an artist, a poet, a technologist. He is my husband. He is a professor at Concordia in computation arts.
Mm-hmm. Cool human. Yeah, I know. He's a cool human. Okay.
Very smart, cool guy. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you and Jason... Yeah.
Handsome.
Yeah, I'm no comment. So, Abtech.
Yeah, so I think it was probably around 2005. I was presenting CyberPOW at Banff, and Celia Pierce, who was talking about modding, she came up to me and she was like, how would you like to see native characters in video games? And I was like, I think I'd like that a lot.
Yeah.
And so there was this new pilot project grant available from SHRC, and it was for Aboriginal Research Networks. And Jason was like, I think this is the thing we need to like launch this, launch this network, you know, launch this project, this plan that we want to have Indigenous people in cyberspace, really. Yeah. And so that's how ABTECH was born, Aboriginal Territories in Cyberspace. And that tagline came from Cyber Powwow, which I called an Aboriginal Territory in Cyberspace. We started off by inviting people that we thought would be interested in this idea. So we invited, you know, like Steve Loft, like so native people, but also non-native game studies type people, makers. Yeah, there was a whole bunch of people. I remember there was Louis Profit Leblanc. She's a storyteller and she's a grandma. And she was like, she's the one we feel said, you have to teach youth how to make video games. And that's how Skins was born.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. That's another, we should touch on that.
The
okay.
Skins workshops are a major project of ABTECH. Skins workshops in Aboriginal storytelling and experimental digital media. So the first Skins workshop took place at Ganawagi Survival School, and it took place over a whole year.
Okay.
And that we were able to do because my amazing cousin, Oizogo Lahash, was willing to let us try doing this thing with her students.
Okay.
Yeah, she actually had kind of two classes. And what we had to do is we had to assemble a team that could teach all the different parts of the video game. And so that was quite a challenge. And we built a whole curriculum. And then we did it again. We've done it 6 times now. And changing, you know, always tweaking it. Like, okay, can we do it not over a whole year? And we find that the shortest time we can do it in is 3 weeks. Well, we did it in 14 days one time, but with no breaks, and everybody nearly died.
Okay.
So the team of instructors is Concordia students.
Okay.
So they're all like writing the curriculum, showing these Indigenous high school students, you know, what is a game?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, what are the language of games, like game mechanics, that kind of thing. You know, what is 3D modeling? What is animation? What are the principles of animation? I mean,
so now talk to me about ABTECH Island.
Yeah. So here I am making all these machinimas in Second Life. Started making Time Traveler TM in Second Life.
Mm-hmm.
Just in Second Life, you know, the place. So we go there and, you know, we want to make a set. So we start to build like his storage locker. And then we're like, okay, well, where can we, you know, you can't just build anywhere in Second Life. You have to find a sandbox. So, you know, build a sandbox. And I say we, because again, I'm working with students.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm working with one student at this
right.
time. She figures out, you know, she's learning how to build. She builds this storage locker facility, which is like a great big block. You know, she finds a sandbox, builds it. And then like, well, when we leave, when her shift is over, she has to take it down. She can't just leave anything. You don't, it's not good, you know, you can't leave something in someone else's sandbox. That's not cool. So she puts it away, and when she comes out, she opens it up. Oh, this isn't in the right place now, because whatever. So she has to restart every time. Oh, okay, so then next time she comes back to the sandbox, oh, we've paved it and made a parking lot. Like,
oh, okay.
People can change whatever. They offer sandboxes. It's not like it's not something that you can expect, you know?
Yeah.
So we finally were like, I think we need our own island.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, Second Life was offering its educational institutions half price on islands.
So, okay.
Yeah, so we got...
That's so funny.
I know.
Half price on islands.
Well, what we think is hilarious is that real Indians pay real money for virtual land.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. That's a mind fuck right there. That's
hilarious.
We could talk about that. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So basically then we had the wonderful freedom of being able to build our sets and leave them there and film
right.
there. And then as I made more episodes and then more machinimas, you know, I had all these sets. And so we did actually have to start putting stuff away because you have a limit. It's basically a memory limit. And like each item takes up some memory.
Right.
So basically, we'd put away sets. And then when we had our exhibition at the Ellen Gallery at Concordia.
Mm, yes.
Yeah, it was amazing. Like this cool retrospective of ABTECH's work. And my team decided, it was so cool because I didn't even like have the, I was so busy with other things that I didn't have the thought to like make a beautiful space in on Aptek Island. I was like, oh, well, we can just show them Aptek Island. Like people right. can have it running and people can enter Aptek Island in the gallery. And, you know, the galleries, everyone thought that was a great idea, but Nancy Townsend, my producer, amazing person who's been working with me for at least 10 years, she was like, shouldn't we make it look like nicer? I'm like, it does look nice.
It looks pretty cool.
Well, what it looks like now is what she did.
Oh.
She's like, let's put all the, some of our most awesome sets all together. Okay. Around, like, this plaza. Like she just had this whole plan in her head and she made that happen. Oh. Yeah. And it is beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Very nice.
Moment. With the longhouses and the tobacco hanging and it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And you can fly.
I know.
That's wicked. Like literally fly into the sunset. So are people there? Are they coming to hang out? You invite people?
So every Friday we have Activating Aptek Island.
Yes.
Which is that we make sure that at least one of us from the Aptek team is there on the island just waiting to greet visitors.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, there are some Fridays. It's Friday. Right now it's Friday afternoons at 2:30.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes nobody shows up.
Right. I did meet Maze Longboat there one day and he was like showing me around and like helping me with the controls and he was very cool. It was nice to kind of have a tour.
We have like at least a dozen and sometimes two dozen people a week.
Would you like there to be more?
I mean, what I would like yeah. is if people use that space to meet, to talk to one another about things that, you know, Native artists or Native people or Native avatars or just anyone need to talk about. But I don't think that's happening, but yeah, that's what I just think is like one of the great things. It could be another thing is like, oh, there's just so many things I can imagine people, artists doing in that space.
What are you working on now? So this is like a fashion show?
Yeah.
What is this? Tell me about this.
Calico and Camouflage is a fashion collection of resistance wear. And it's based on traditional ribbon shirts, which are usually made with calico and ribbons.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about combining elements of traditional regalia with elements of military clothing, which yep. Native people have adopted since I think from my research, it seems that it was Wounded Knee that was the first instance of sort of Native people in resistance to governments, to, you know, colonial governments, mm-hmm. Wearing military gear. I should mention that Gazitzakwas Ellen Gabriel did a satirical fashion show in which she had everyone wear camouflage. And so she put together, you know, camouflage, indigenous bodies, and fashion. And so that's happened. So I think it's important to acknowledge yeah. her work.
Right.
But I'm not being satirical, actually.
And so you're making the outfits yourself? Have you made the patterns?
What I've done is of course, I have my avatar in Second Life, XOX, and I made her a ribbon shirt a long time ago. And I wanted to think about the future of ribbon shirts when I made her a ribbon shirt. So I designed a calico that was, in my opinion, futuristic. And so I used a flower, that I always doodled all my life. I just took that one tiny flower, and thanks to these amazing students, one of them, I asked her to, like, I said, can you turn this into like a pattern, like place it so it's a calico? And then so we did that. That was the first step. And then the next step was, okay, now what would be futuristic calico? Well, what if the flowers are growing? So let's make it so that like some of the flowers are bigger. Anyway, so that was my kind of first design of fabric. The ribbon shirts will be made with camouflage patterns. And the pants, which are usually camouflage, will be made with calico.
Okay. Yeah.
I want to do them in various colors. Like I chose four colors that I thought were reflective of, that were kind of powerful colors. Mm-hmm. Like so powerful pink,
mm-hmm.
but also like a kind of cyber blue, olive green to nod yeah. to the actual army color, and black and white. So mm-hmm. gray, but mm-hmm. also black and white are in there. Like gray is sort of gunmetal and also cyber, you know, like
yeah.
metallic and, I don't know, it has a
robot feel. Technology
robots, exactly.
kind of yeah.
But I should say that my intention was first to make these outfits just for my avatars. It was all going to be a virtual fashion show. And then I went to Indigenous Fashion 2018, and I was like...
blown away.
I was blown away. Yeah. And the main thing was that, you know, usually you see fashion shows where models are walking on the runway and they're not smiling. Everyone looks a little bit the same, you know. And then at Indigenous Fashion Week Toronto, there was like all the colors, all the sizes, a bunch of ages, and all of them smiling. And it was this joyful event. And that's why I wanted to do my own fashion show. But as I started making the fashion show, like as I actually started filming, like the model, my, like my avatar walking down the runway, I was like,
this needs to be...
this is so boring.
Needs to be real.
But anyway, then what happened is Indigenous Fashion Week Toronto 2020 did a call for the run to be on the runway show. And I'm like, wait a second, I know how to make clothes. I think I can, I'm going to apply. So I applied and I got in.
So when is the show?
May 27th or 8th. I can't remember.
Sweet Jesus. You got your work cut out for you. But so like now you're... it's not like you're leaving the computer behind, but you've stepped away a little bit, and now you're working with your hands and with other materials, or, you know, like you're exploring something else. And so how does that feel? Are you...
it feels mostly great. I mean, I love sewing. I've loved sewing since I was a little girl. It's really exciting, and it's opening up. It is opening up a new avenue for me. Like, you know, the thing is I have been designing costumes for avatars now for quite a while. I've been designing them for my artwork since Imagining Indians in the 25th century. That's 20 years.
Yeah.
And so I don't know why I haven't gone here sooner. I mean, I've just been, there's just been so much to do in the virtual world, and it's been so great. I've loved it. I've loved it. The other thing about making actual clothing is that it feels so, I feel it has such a potential of universality. Like, you know, when I show machinima, there's always people who are like, what am I looking at? Is this animation? Is it, you know, what? I don't even understand what I'm looking at. And they can't connect to the artwork because of that. When you make clothes, everybody knows what they're looking at. You know, and clothing are political statements.
Oh, yeah. What you described to me is quite political. So, yeah. You know?
I think even if you choose not to wear clothes, you're making a statement. So it just feels like there's
something to be said there. It's an avenue to explore. Yeah for sure. So you mentioned joy like a few times. It seems like that's one of your driving factors, is like finding joy in things or doing something because it brings you joy. So maybe like your kind of self-care is already, it's like worked into your practice a lot. Do you feel like that?
I think that's a big part of it. Absolutely.
Sounds like you're having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I know there's a lot of like other things. Like I really need sleep. I really need to eat. So like I get a lot of sleep. Like I have my, like 8 hours is my minimum.
Me too.
Yeah. If I have less than 8 hours, I'm so unhappy. And I don't... I just don't think as fast, and I don't, and then if I don't eat, and I have to eat 4 times a day, and like, I can tell time by my hunger. and I'm just trying to always improving what I eat. And I'm always learning, like, the self-care thing, as we discussed earlier, I have to say no to a few more things. I mean, it's, as they say, a great problem to have, but...
I'm glad you didn't say no to me. But but it's time for us to eat, so we gotta go. Eat and sleep. What's next? Can you give me like a little? It's so exciting. So you've got the fashion show.
That's the big thing.
That's the big thing right now.
And then, you know, I want to finish my Words Before All Else series. I want to make more costumes. So I went to England this year. I went to London, and I thought about visiting the Queen. And I thought, oh, how silly. And then I thought, wait a minute. XOX can visit the Queen in a machinima, but then...
I know. Yeah. Then what? What happened?
The royal family came to visit XOX! That was amazing! And then, but then they stopped being royal, which is hilarious. But yeah, I'd love to do a machinima, XOX visits the Queen, and she would say everything that I'm, you know, I might be too chicken to say if I actually did meet her. But I don't know if I would be, because, you know... if you get a chance to meet the Queen, you need to say...
I know, but really, like, there's probably, like, bodyguards, and you probably have, like, 2 seconds to... do you have to kiss her hand or something?
You have to curtsy.
I'd be all curtsying in, like, army pants or something. Like, can you curtsy in army pants? That just sounds wrong. Yes!
All is possible.
That's the calico and the camouflage coming together. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm really looking forward to the fashion show.
So am I.
Is it going to be here?
No, it's in Toronto.
Damn, I need tickets to that.
I know. Apparently a few people, like, I don't even know how to get tickets, but I mean, I know I'll be there.
Save me a ticket.
Yeah, it'd be great. It'd be great to have some people, my people in the audience.
We'll be there. Okay. We'll be there.
No, I'll go.